Welcome to the Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
Your weekend wake-up tradition for the last 30 years.
It's Rosie on the House.
On a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning. You are tuned in to Rosie on the House. Your Saturday morning tradition for 30 years. But that 30 years doesn't sound so impressive when you get your old farmer's almanac that they send you, and they send you the old farmer's almanac they published 100 years ago, along with the old farmer's almanac they published 200 years ago.
200 years.
It's actually their 227th printing, annual printing.
You're always fascinated by those, aren't you?
Well, you know what I like is to look back and see what they were writing about 200 years ago.
What were they writing about? So what is the purpose of the Farmer's Almanac?
It is originally a pamphlet to help agriculture predict weathers and seasons and crops and rotations. And there's a lot of talk around planting and following the phases of the moon. It helps your germination, and so they would use these guidelines to know when they're going to schedule their planting. And growing up, I was always under the impression smut was a very bad word. I mean, even the word itself was almost offensive. It was so derogatory. But do you know what smut really is?
No idea.
It's a small flake of soot, a fungal disease for grains, which eats and part of the ear and changes the grain to a black powder.
So it is a bad word.
It is. But it didn't apply to what it I
what you used it for.
It's a bad word if you don't have a cure for it, yeah.
And in 1819, 200 years ago, they were writing about the problem of smutty wheat.
Smutty wheat.
Smutty wheat and how to remedy it. And you read through this, and it's a series. I mean, the time that they spent washing their wheat with water to get rid of the smut must have taken months to do this. And it talks about the importance of it because at that time, you go a couple pages further in the pamphlet, and it talks about just how critical wheat is because that's where they get their bread, the most necessary article of our food.
Hmm. And smut could make you sick if you didn't get it off the wheat,
mm-hmm.
ruin your crop altogether.
You couldn't even make a bread with it. It just turns the...
Mushed it out
or
something.
Yeah, it turns... It renders the wheat useless.
And back then, they wouldn't have a recall for wheat thins.
Yeah, it'd be too late. Do we cure smut?
I don't know. Have you ever heard the word smut referred to wheat though in your entire life?
No.
I even asked Stan, I won't say the old guy, but he's our he's our old guy.
Whoa.
Dinosaur by Rosie on the House remodel standards. Gary's like, careful, I office next to him.
Yeah, that's right.
I went to the most senior personnel on staff going back thinking maybe, you know, is it just me? And he's like, smutzo. And he's very knowledgeable on things like that. If somebody
yeah, he's master gardener level.
It would have been him. But so for a long time, smut has never been associated with wheat in our modern culture. And so it obviously has been a... is not near the factor it was. That'll be a question for Julie Murphy when she comes in. All right, fast forward.
100 years?
1919. They're writing about the shortage of sugar. What was going on?
Oh, depression. Well, getting ready to, anyway.
1919. Not only has the supply of sugar in some parts of the United States been short, but there has been an actual shortage of more than 2 million tons. All right, a ton's 2,000 pounds.
That's a lot.
2 million tons annually in the world since the war has begun. And the shortage is likely to continue primarily because of the destruction of large number of sugar mills and devastation of a considerable area of sugar production lands in Europe.
That's an overwhelming number, amount.
You know, it's funny because it takes you back to a different time, but aren't you glad you don't have to live in a world where you're worried about sugar because of a war?
You need it to stay energetic, I would think. Natural sugar, at least.
Prior to the war, practically all the belligerent countries in the, with the exception of the United Kingdom and England, United Kingdom and Italy, exported sugar, the total amount being upwards of 3 million tons. War, however, has changed the sugar production map and at the same time has shifted channels of trade. In 1918, it is estimated that allies must import a minimum of 1.2 million tons of sugar. And it concludes that, therefore, this is the duty of the United States to supply the Allies with sugar, and this can be accomplished only by the most careful saving of sugar in every home throughout the United States.
I do remember them talking about rationing. Wow. For the good of the whole world, we had to ration our sugar.
It's a different kind of rationing, because World War II was rubber, newspaper or something, you know, something along that line. But that's the first I've heard of World War I rationing sugar.
So you can track the history of the world through gardening, too. Who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah.
Well, they don't have nearly as the editorial in today's Farmer's Almanac isn't nearly the same, which is kind of a bummer because I enjoy those. But there are still plenty of interesting stories. The weather predictions for the desert Southwest, with the exception of March, April, May, and June, they all expect it to be 3 to 4 degrees higher than normal. Mm. But the rest of the year, they estimate it to be like August or July will be 2 degrees below normal.
This is for 2019 coming up.
August will be 2. September will be 3 degrees below normal.
Looking forward to that.
What do you think the average temperature in July is? This one surprised me.
105.
Day and night, average temperature.
Oh day and night.
100?
85.
Oh, wow. Feels, yeah.
Phoenix might be an exception. Yes. The desert Southwest includes Vegas, Phoenix, Tucson, Albuquerque, and El Paso. Mm.
Yeah, we got the heat island
Flagstaff
effect, too.
It excludes Flagstaff and anywhere from the from south of the rim.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that you only need 3 inches of ice to be able to walk on it? Is that not amazing? A liquid.
Say it again.
Can turn to be something structural. 3 inches of ice is the depth you would need for a single person to walk on foot.
Hmm.
And at 36 inches, that's 3 feet of ice, it will support 110 tons. That's over 200,000 pounds.
So we're talking about places like Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm glad I don't have to. I live in a place I don't have to know this. Or I wouldn't know this. But I mean, just think about how amazing is water. Is there any other liquid that just naturally is available out there that's you could drink it, you can melt it, you can freeze it, you can harden it, all the different
comes out of the sky
forms that of water. They've got an interesting story in here. Gary's a kind of a sports nut. He might know this one. He's busy getting our guest on the line.
Getting our guest on the line.
For Mets and baseball, does the 1969 Mets season spark any interest to you?
Not me, you know that.
I don't know a lot about baseball, but the names, the pitchers, Tom Seaver, Jerry Koosman, Gary Gentry, any of those names ring a bell?
Seaver does for sure. He's a, I want to say he's a Hall of Famer too. The other two, not quite sure.
And why are they in the Farmer's Almanac? Yeah.
Well, it was about the 1969 Mets season. So it was an anniversary for, because this is the 1919 Farmanac. So it's the, what would that be, 50 years anniversary? 40 years. 50. That'd be 50. Holy smokes. Talking about it's the storybook come from behind. Nobody expected it. No, 50-1 chance in a million that they were ever going to win the World Series or whatever it is in baseball. Is it the World Series? The pennant? Mm-hmm. So, among those other pitchers was a young flamethrower from Texas named Nolan Ryan. I never knew he was anything but a Texas Ranger. I didn't know he started out at the Mets. So, fun stories. The most interesting one that I found, have you ever heard of a gentleman by the name of John Paul Stapp, S-T-A-P-P?
Nope.
You have him to thank for seatbelts.
Interesting.
And it was indirectly, he was really trying to prove that you could build an ejection seat in an airplane and it wouldn't kill the pilot. At the time, it was thought that anything over a G-force of 18 would break the human body. You know, your bones would shatter, you would just collapse. Anything over a G-force of 18. And so he would strap himself onto these rail cars.
Those pictures are really good, Romy.
So, you know what I'm most impressed with? They had a camera in the 40s that could take pictures because this time frame of these six shots is less than 6 seconds.
Wow.
So on December 10th, 1954, he mounted a rocket sled named Sonic Wind and in 5 seconds accelerated from 0 to 632 miles per hour. 5 seconds, you're going over 600 miles an hour. That's faster than a .45 caliber bullet. And with a series of water breaks, decelerated him back to zero in 1.4 seconds, delivering a 46.2 G-force.
No pressure suit, no nothing, just the human body.
Sounds like a good case for whiplash.
Yeah.
It set the land speed record, and his eyes filled with blood, and he experienced pain that compared to having teeth extracted without anesthesia, yet he insisted on walking away from the sled. He was able to stagger a few steps with assistance before accepting a stretcher ride. Blind at first, he was able to see shapes after 4 hours and could identify friends and colleagues the next day. Bruises, cracked ribs, broken wrists, bleeding blisters caused by high-speed wind and sand abrasion, concussions, retinal, were just some of the bruises he received. But he proved his point.
If I sneeze, and you know, I guess that makes me the winner.
The Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.